This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access shows live or as podcasts by going online to kuci.org. This is the In the Garden Show, produced by UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I am Ann Liu, your host for the hour. This week's topic is California native plants. My guest is Mike Evans. He is the founder and co-owner of Tree of Life Nursery in San Juan Capistrano off the Ortega Highway. He is frequently a guest speaker at Reata Park and Event Center in San Juan Capistrano. That's one of the UC Master Gardener venues that we support in South County. Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
Mike, let's begin with a little bit of history. You were before your time when you began Tree of Life. Can you tell me what your inspiration was and who you are now and how Tree of Life is now?
Well, thank you, Anne. I don't know if we were really before our time because there were other horticulturists and native plant enthusiasts who came long before we came along. In all areas of California, in the Bay Area, there was an emphasis on native plants back 50 years more or more. In Los Angeles, we had Theodore Payne, who promoted native plants in the 50s and 60s. And on the foundation, which bears his name, continues today. So we stepped in about 1976 and started growing native plants in San Juan Capistrano and really formalized the business in 1981. This is when my business partner, Jeff Bond, joined me. We're still business partners to this day. And yes, at the time, we were the only nursery growing native plants at the scale and the volume that you see today. We've grown, of course, but we took it pretty serious because our goal was to specialize only in native plants, not just add them in to a larger nursery inventory, but to actually grow nothing but native plants. So in that respect, we picked up where others had left off, and we continue today. Our inspiration, quite frankly, from a personal point of view, was I just wanted to be outdoors. I grew up here in Newport Beach. I surfed and hiked and played around outdoors in my whole childhood and youth. And when it got time to settle down and figure out how to make a living, I really wanted to stay outdoors. So nursery was a wonderful opportunity to work with plants and to be outside and then to incorporate my love for the natural world and grow native plants in a nursery really fulfilled that dream.
Thank you so much for that correction. It's just that for me, the idea of California native plants is relatively new, and it's probably because the movement toward native plants is only coming up to become more popular and current now. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I would say that's true. That's again, it's always had a sort of quiet voice in the world of horticulture in California. That is the field of native plants. And that's simply because our climate and our weather conditions and our environment is so conducive to growing plants from all over the world, literally just about anything, tropical to alpine, many, many fruit trees. So it's a horticultural wonderland. And obviously, over the decades, with the inclusion of available irrigation water and just the ability to grow so many different types of plants, specialty plants or specialty lines like natives sort of get lost in the fray because there are so many wonderful opportunities to grow different types of plants all through California.
Now, we're going to talk about what natives are in a little bit, but I think natives have become especially popular today because of the awareness, for the search for more drought-tolerant plants.
Yes, this has always been their sort of number one selling point, the thing that the general public looks at the top of the list for why to plant native plants. And it certainly makes the list. I won't deny that. But we believe that the list starts with sort of an authentic approach to California's environment, the look, the feel, the taste, the smell of the garden, the experience in the garden, making it natural, bringing birds and butterflies, native pollinators, and lots of beneficials into the garden where they'll stay. And then, you know, further down the list, water conservation. Now, that's just our list, the order we put on it.
And I agree with that list. I think that's very important. And I think that's why we have you on the show. Mm. I think there's a huge interest in making that appeal known for more landscapers, for more home gardens. Let's talk about your location.
Mm-hmm.
You're the largest supplier of native plants in the state. Wholesale, right?
Yes.
Where are you?
We're in San Juan Capistrano. We're on the historic Rancho Mission Viejo on Ortega Highway, which is along the San Juan Creek, and we lease 40 acres there. A beautiful spot just near Casper's Park, so we're about 8 miles from the freeway. We're also open to the general public, so we are technically a wholesale nursery with a retail emphasis at a plant store and very unique shopping experience called Casa La Paz, which is right there on our place.
You do have a beautiful place. I remember visiting your Tree of Life just recently and stood there near your outdoor classroom, and I could see the three creeks coming together just below me and listening to that soothing running fountain you have. It was very, very pretty. And you still find Native American artifacts there, I understand.
Yes, it's a spot that there are some huge trees. The biggest sycamore in the country is there. Very, very large oaks bordering the San Juan Creek. The creeks that come together are Bell Canyon and Verdugo, which run into the San Juan. And we're on a big plain, which was probably at one time a meadow bordering a perennial stream. And there's actually a spring very close. So it's undoubtedly one of the most beautiful spots on the ranch. And I'm quite sure that Native Americans, you know, lived there year round. And once in a while, you know, I'll find a stone, even on the surface, that was used as a tool or has some old feeling about it.
So from this beautiful site, you pull many, many plants to propagate. You have 6-packs, 1 gallon, 2 gallon.
We mostly sell 1 gallon, 5 gallon, 15 gallon landscape plants. We do grow everything that you'll see at the nursery from seed or cutting. So we are plant propagators. And we're starting from scratch, as it were.
And I saw your many greenhouses and saw the soil that you were propagating these cuttings in. Can you share your secret, what you propagate in, what soil you use?
Well, it's not exactly a secret. I mean, growing plants, whether it's tropical plants, herbs, fruit trees, general ornamental plants, native plants, there's some tried and true technique. And growing from seed and growing from cutting is common throughout the world for propagating plants. Basically, you just need, you know, good drainage, and you need low fertility at the stage of seedlings and cuttings, and a medium which will not stay too wet, because that would cause fungal problems or damping off or sort of root rot, but not dry out either. So that's as specific as I can really get, because there's no secret to it. It's just mainly good drainage and perennial moisture.
So when I went home and planted some of the plants that I bought at Tree of Life, I was sure to use a little bit of perlite,
mm-hmm.
and to increase the drainage in my clay soil.
Yes, in pots you could use perlite for sure if you need to have better aeration. In the ground, I think it's important to choose the right plant. So you would actually look for plants that will grow well in clay soil, and you might amend or sort of fluff up the soil around the root ball at the very beginning, but in the long run, the plant has to go out into that soil, so you can't change that. You have to choose plants that will grow in your soil.
Very good. We're going to go into planting natives in a little bit, and plus Mike has a YouTube where he does a demonstration, so we'll save that for a little bit later. Back to your Tree of Life a little bit more. You have a retail store called Casa La Paz, and I really liked being inside. It's very rustic, smelled good with your coffee, and has a special charm with that art you have with Mark Kirchhoff.
Mm-hmm. Kirchhoff. Mm-hmm.
Kirchhoff. He does a lot of plein air.
Yes, he's. We're very privileged to have Mark as sort of our artist in residence. We've been showing his work for a long, long time. He's very well known in Southern California, and he likes the vibe at Tree of Life Nursery, I think, better than he likes the gallery scene these days. So we're very privileged to have many, many of his paintings in there. The buildings themselves lend themselves to his displaying his style of art, because we've built structures which look like old California adobes. They're plastered with adobe. They have thick walls because they're made of straw bale, plastered straw bale structures. And we've tried to create the feel of an old California ranch with white stucco adobe buildings and friendly dogs and a fire in the fireplace and pretty decent coffee and nice people. And come on over.
Speaking of nice people, you have a long-lasting team. I understand your production's foreman was with you for how long?
Well, the production foreman was with me since we were both young men, and his we watched him get married. We watched him and he and his wife have children. We remember a baby shower we had for his son, who later came on to become part of our sales team, 30 years later. So we have a team of people, about 32, 33 employees, and many of them have been there more than 20 years, 25. It's just amazing that we've grown up together. We're still experiencing life together, the ups and downs, the personal victories and challenges in life. And so it's like a family.
And it shows a real commitment to native plants. You also have the sitting president of California Native Plant Society, Laura Camp, as your general manager.
Yes, our general manager, Laura Camp, became active in the California Native Plant Society Orange County chapter several years ago, and then became a state representative and became active in the state, leadership in the organization, and is just finishing up her 2-year stint as president of California Native Plant Society. We're very proud of her.
And so for our listeners out there who are interested in learning more about California Native Plants, look up California Native Plant Society, because they have their chapter meetings here in Irvine. All right, let's move on now to California Native Plants. What are they? Can you give a description? There are so many types, over 6,000 species.
Yeah, well, this is a question I get asked a lot, especially if we're in an older part of the world, like when I was in Europe or in England or in Japan, where people have cultivated the ground for so long. They ask me, how do you know what's native? And I say, I just look across the street at the chaparral coastal sage scrub community, or I take a walk up a canyon close by into an oak woodland, or I go out into the desert and see what's there, or I go to a wild spot on the coast like Torrey Pines or something and just look. That's how I know what's native. So what happens is that in these other parts of the world, even in eastern parts of North America, the land has been sort of beat down so hard for so long that it's hard for people to find representations of the native vegetation. We're very fortunate in the West. We still have native plants and native plant communities and wild land fairly close at hand. And so we get an idea what nature looks like just from going out into a spot that hasn't been disturbed, and there are still plenty of those places close at hand. So the native plants of California, you mentioned over 6,000, and that's right. It's an incredibly diverse and unique flora and one that should be, you know, celebrated in the garden because, as I tell people, with that many varieties or taxa, that many types of plants in a given geographical region, just the mathematical odds of a few of them being attractive are pretty high. So with 6,000 to choose from, you're going to get some real pretty ones in there, and we do have some lovely plants.
It's a common misconception that all native plants are drought tolerant, right?
Yeah, I think that's right, because obviously in any environment there are wet places. So, plants that grow alongside a stream or near or in a pond or where there is perennial moisture, you couldn't put into a dry spot and expect it to do well. So it's a matter of planting the plant in the right place.
When you're landscaping your garden, it's important to know the hydrozones or the irrigation groups in your garden when you select and combine them. So do you suggest changing the topography to fit the plants?
What we like to think about is a landscape or a garden that really invites people in. That's the kind of the top of the list, is what are you going to do in your garden, you know? And if you can find a way to get in and little tiny paths or a little sitting spot or some place that you can walk in or be part of the garden on a regular basis and make that more interesting, and also in order to get rainfall to stay on the site rather than run off, you want your garden to become a super efficient sponge. And the best way to do that is with kind of micro topography, little basins and swales and areas to catch and detain as much water as possible before it runs off. When you do that, you have an interesting topography, although it's not mountains, it's just little mounds and little dips in your garden, but they become more interesting and more fun to plant. And when you plant those with the appropriate types of native plants, you actually represent sort of a wild place. It sort of turns into a miniature nature zone.
That sounds beautiful. Mm-hmm. So some of the hydrozones or little microclimates in a garden could be full sun, little water, and another area that collects a little bit more water can be more like a riparian.
Mm-hmm.
Hydrozone, right. How do you amend the soil?
Well, this is a good question because every gardener has their own sort of philosophy on this. What we tell people is that these plants are native and they are adapted to these soils and these conditions. But in many cases, people are dealing with soil, which isn't even soil. It's the remainder of some massive grading project, and it's the center, the inside of some hill, which now they're supposed to grow plants. So you amend only to make the soil friable and well-draining and somewhat, so that it will accommodate good plant growth. But the most important thing is not so much how to amend, which is usually done with organic material to, like compost, to increase moisture retention and aeration. But more important than amending is to choose plants that are adapted to the soil type that you have so that you don't have to amend, or you only amend right in the planting hole just to get the plant started.
Is it okay to add, let's say, coffee grinds to the soil to give it nitrogen?
Sure. I mean, coffee grinds will help acidify the soil. There's anything that if it's working, if you're a gardener and you're used to doing something with your soil or with your plants and it's working for you, keep doing it with native plants. But know this, you might have to do less. So because the plants are so efficient at bringing up nutrients out of poor soils, making their way through dry summers, subsisting, and thriving in our environment, you don't have to do quite so much amendment fertilizing, certainly not as much pest control. It's a more passive and more holistic approach to gardening than the intensive labor and type of gardening that requires so many inputs.
That sounds so inviting. When I re-landscaped my garden 6 years ago and gave up my lawn, I didn't even know about natives at that time. I wasn't a UC Master Gardener yet. I was still new to this. This was going to be my retirement project. If I Had Only Known. So let's get this out to the general public that there is an easy way to gardening and a more natural, holistic way to have our garden be part of our home. Mm. Some of the native plants come from different habitats, like coastal, inland, valley, desert, and mountains. In Southern California, more people are responding to the drought by looking for full sun, little water, little soil amending, and drainage. But they have existing ornamentals. How can natives be mixed with existing ornamentals?
Well, that's great. Usually the existing ornamentals that would remain if you were in the process of re-landscaping or building a native plant garden would be the trees, because you like the shade, or maybe some of the large shrubs, which are established and they're serving a purpose. Maybe they're providing some shade or some screening or a sound barrier or some sort of function in the garden. We're going to assume that they can get by on little water. If you have large plants that require a lot of water, you're going to have to do one or the other. You're going to have to either continue to water a lot, or you're going to have to bite the bullet and take them out, because if the goal is to convert your garden to native plants, it has to have one particular watering regime. The fact is that in coastal California, which is most of the developed parts of California, many of the established trees and shrubs are in the landscape getting more water than they need. So if they stay behind and you plant new native plants around them, you'll have a garden that's very compatible, one plant with the other, and you'll have the same water needs in most cases, and you don't have to sacrifice that big, beautiful shade tree or that functional hedge or screen planting that you have. You can plant using it right as part of your new landscape.
That is very reassuring. It's less intimidating knowing that you can still maintain some of your existing plants and just add a little bit at a time. And it's nice to know that some natives are flowering year-round. Like I just bought the fairy duster, mm-hmm. and find that it has little red bottle brush, small little flower. Mm-hmm. Very, very pretty.
This is our native Calliandra. It grows in the deserts and it grows in Baja California. It's a beautiful plant for attracting hummingbirds and other pollinating insects. And yeah, here where we are, there's a flower to all year round. And of course, in the spring and summer, it really flowers heavy. So by combining plants like that with other plants that come into bloom at different times of year, it's very, very easy to have a garden that has color all year and interest and attracting pollinators and birds.
And I even got a ground cover called Sun Drops. This is so pretty, bright yellow flowers.
Yes, Sun Drops is in this group of plants that we include as part of our native plant line. It happens to be from Arizona, and we also grow plants from Northern Mexico and from Baja California. And someone would say, well, those aren't native in California. But I would answer, here in Southern California, in the garden, we can relate very easily to some of the desert plants and some of the flowering type desert plants from those areas just outside California's borders. So I say that we grow plants from California and her sunny borders. The sunny borders being, again, Arizona, Mexico, Baja California. It would be easy to say, okay, so we grow native plants and bring in some species from up near the Oregon border, and it would technically be a plant from California. But it really possibly wouldn't do well at all in San Diego County or Orange County, where we are, because of our climate. But I can go over into parts of Arizona, parts of the desert in California, Sonora, Mexico, or Baja, and get some beautiful, beautiful specimen species that do wonderfully in our gardens. Those are the ones we're including in our native plant line for home gardeners. These are the sunny border plants.
And I was looking for some plants for a sensory garden. I have little children checking out the plants, liking to touch them and smell them and feel them. So I was delighted to find your woolly blue curls. It smells like bubblegum.
Well, there's a lot of sensory plants. Mediterranean climate zones, of which, you know, California is one, are kind of notorious for interesting flora, interesting plants. That's the Mediterranean area. That's south tip of Australia, parts of the southern tip of Australia, Chile, the coastal Chile, and California. And these zones come from the term Mediterranean climate zone. The climate in all of those areas in the world are typified by the type of climate that you see around the Mediterranean Sea. So California is the classic example of a Mediterranean climate zone. And in all of those areas, aromatic plants and sensory plants are abundant. Like in the Mediterranean zone, we have many sages and sagebrush, rosemary, many, many different herbs. And of course, California has no lack of very beautiful sensory plants and aromatic and fragrant plants.
Does that mean we can still keep our roses and irises?
Well, you can keep anything you want. Again, this is the point. I mean, we are purists, if you will, at Tree of Life Nursery because we've chosen to only grow native plants and produce them and sell them. But I started off by saying the garden is more about people than plants. In essence, we're promoting gardens which attract you in and engage you and make the garden experience part of your life. And if your garden experience is more fulfilled by roses and iris and other plants in addition to your native plants, go for it. You know, we're not going to try to tell people to do it one way or the other. What we do find, though, is that as people learn of the beauty of native plants and the diversity and the many, many types that are available, they do start to convert over to almost a pure native plant garden because what they want is something that looks like natural habitat.
I found a canyon iris.
I think it might have been one of our native iris, Pacific Coast iris, canyon snow or canyon sparkles.
Yes.
Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These are hybrid iris. They're native, not to the desert, but from the north coast. And they are true iris in the genus iris. And they're native to California. They come from a species called Iris douglasiana, Douglas iris. And interestingly, iris fanciers will know this, that the California native iris has the longest blooming period of any iris, any true iris, whereas the bearded iris and many other iris that we're familiar with just kind of come into bloom and then they all fade. The California native iris plants bloom over a very long period.
And there are desert roses as well, right?
Yes, yes, there are. And there's a California wild rose, which grows in parts of the desert as well as other habitats.
And I bought a desert lavender.
Mm-hmm. Desert lavender is a shrub which grows in the low desert here in Anza-Borrego and throughout the warmer parts of our deserts. And it's a very, very easy plant to grow. It takes pruning, flowers a lot, brings in a lot of pollinators, has aromatic leaves. It's just an easy, fun plant.
And the hummingbird and Cleveland sages, those are so nice. They're so easy to care for.
Yeah, any sage is going to grow fast and bring in lots of pollinating insects and, you know, just be a great part of the garden. Great big, fast fillers.
I'm going to take a station break right now and then come back to our interview with Mike Evans. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org online. This is the In the Garden show, produced by UC Master Gardeners. I am Ann Liu, your Master Gardener, DJ, and host for the hour. For more home garden information, go online to uccemg.com. You can find out more about weeds, pests, ornamental plants, and edibles with photos to help you identify them. uccemg.com gives you month-by-month gardening tips and information about soils, fertilizers, and compost. This website also lists events where UC Master Gardeners are presenting garden workshops based on the latest scientific research done by the University of California Cooperative Extension. Also, you can find information about publications by ANR, Agriculture and Natural Resources. Some of these are free, as well as available in Spanish. Do you have a particular question about your garden? Are you interested in becoming a UC Master Gardener? Are you looking for a speaker for your group? You can go on this website to find answers to your garden questions on our hotline and to access podcasts of our past In the Garden shows. This week's topic is California native plants. My guest is Mike Evans from Tree of Life Nursery in San Juan Capistrano off the Ortega Highway. He is a frequent guest speaker at Rayata Park and Event Center, one of the UC Master Gardener venues that we support in South County. Let's get back to Mike. Hey, Mike, you have a YouTube show on how to plant native plants.
Yeah, it's on our website, which is californianativeplants.com, and it's called Plant It Right. And it's not just for native plants. You can use this technique for any plant, fruit trees, others. And it's just a way to use water in the planting hole and during the planting process to assure that you have a plant that was planted right. Have a look.
Sounds great. Also, in our November Month in the Garden show, Tina Spindler, one of our radio team DJs, talked about planting native plants It can be accessed as a past podcast on uccemg.com. Click on In the Garden and find November Month in the Garden. This show will also be soon available as a podcast too. Mike, you had a wonderful article that I found online. I typed in Mike Evans, Tree of Life Nursery, and found all sorts of links. This article, Ugly is Not a Turf Replacement, was a very informative article, and I wanted to spend some time talking about your practical approach to authentic beauty instead of grass. Now, when we're talking about getting rid of grass, we're not talking about getting rid of useful grass. You want to explain what you mean?
Well, sure. And again, in Southern California, we've become accustomed to growing so many different types of plants. And the fallback for large areas, especially in many of the housing tracts and developments and all over the place, has just been turf. It's easy. It's predictable. But it does require a tremendous amount of maintenance and, of course, a tremendous amount of water. So when turf is planted in an area where it's not for kids to play on or sports or for any real reason, it's just there to cover the ground, that's what we call useless turf. And it's really inappropriate for our climate. And that's the turf that should be replaced as soon as possible if it hasn't already. So the water districts have come out with, you know, programs and rebates and all kinds of incentives for people to take out their turf and replace the turf with drought-tolerant or water-saving type plants, which is a very good thing, and many people have taken advantage. But the problem that I recognized after several months of that and finally had to sort of speak up on, because it was getting pretty a dramatic problem, was that many times what was going in to the garden in place of the turf was not attractive at all. It's unfortunate, but in the name of water conservation, many spaces were planted with no regard for aesthetics, just a few so-called water-conserving or drought-tolerant plants, maybe a couple succulents, some mulch, and call it good. But it didn't have any appeal. It wasn't a garden. It wasn't attractive. So rather opinionated on the sort of a borderline rant, I wrote, "Ugly is not a turf replacement," and it's just to say that we have to be careful. If we're going to take out turf, that's great, but plan and build a beautiful garden with features and with plants that attract people in and will pass the test of time.
Strong point. Our track record is not very good on how we use landscape water. So we've changed the look of Southern California gardens to eliminate grass, and it's not always for the good. And so we can keep useful grass, grass that is a playground for children or for sports and leisure, but not to use a lawn as our default landscape that serves no function or purpose. Strong point. What is really, really ugly? What is your image of a really ugly landscaped garden?
Well, again, it's all about people. If it doesn't draw you in, if it does not have essentially a message, a narrative that says, come in and be part of this garden for a little while, then it's missing something. And it might be that it's not pretty, or it might be clear at the other end of the scale to where it's actually quite ugly and it drives you away. So I think it's in the, you know what it is when you see it. It's one of those things that an attractive garden is one that is not just for looking at, but is for experiencing.
So we're talking about no artificial turf, right?
Well, not if you weren't trying to build a garden. No, you don't have artificial turf in a garden. As soon as you put in artificial turf, you've got a new term. I don't know what it would be, but it doesn't fit into the category garden.
How about colored gravel?
Well, now some of my favorite landscapes happen to be these iconic, I'm being a bit facetious, but these rather iconic that you see in front of motorhomes and in trailer parks in places like Yuma and Quartzsite, where all you have is colored gravel and cow skulls and wagon wheels and big boulders, and they're, it's almost whimsical. So, no, I don't call that a garden, but I happen to have an appreciation for it in context.
In context.
Yes.
Mulch. Do you recommend using organic mulch for weed control, moisture retention?
Yeah. I think we're stepping into an area that master gardeners are very qualified to speak to, but I think no one can deny that in many cases, the quality of the mulch which we have available to us is very poor. There are high salts, there are toxins, it's not well composted, it came from material that had disease, there are weed seeds. It's very unfortunate, but the mulch situation in Southern California is a little bit out of hand. And so if you're using high quality, good compost mulch or good bark chips or something that you know the source and you know the quality, for the purposes of water conservation and weed, discouraging weeds, that's a tried and true practice in horticulture. But just piling up organic matter that came from who knows where around all your plants, we've seen many, many places where this causes problems in the garden rather than solving problems.
Is there anything else you would like to add to our discussion on native plants?
Well, I'd like to just mention that since we're talking to gardeners who love gardens, to encourage everyone to understand the purpose of the native plant garden is to make nature accessible at a small scale to everyone who would be in the garden. And I like to remember that the champions at this for centuries have been the Japanese people in Japan who built Japanese gardens and became world famous for it. And now there are Japanese gardens built in botanic gardens and parks, universities, and public places all over the country. Well, why is that? Because they're very, very special gardens. They're amazing. The hyper miniaturization and the pruning and whatnot became its own tradition. But even without that, here's what the Japanese people did. They took Japanese native plants, they planted them in Japan, and they made it look like nature in miniature. So essentially, the Japanese garden in Japan is a native plant garden. And that's all we're saying. California can do the same thing. We don't need all the pruning and the hyper-miniaturization and the tremendous tradition that the Japanese people have built into their gardens. But we can have miniature nature gardens, by using native plants in California, and it can become as special as the Japanese garden is in Japan, the California garden. By the way, the Japanese garden is not just for looking at. You do walk in. You do experience it very closely and very intimately because of the paths and the sitting areas and the ponds and the places where you can reflect and meditate or really appreciate nature. And so they're calming places, they're healing places, and that's what the California Garden is as well. It's a place to get in close to nature without having to go out to some wild place.
And some nice demonstration gardens for native plants is down in San Juan Capistrano. I visited Los Rios Park, L-O-S-R-I-O-S Park. You can find that in the City of San Juan Capistrano Community Service listing, as well as Rialta Park and Event Center. They have a wonderful brochure to use on a self-guided tour. And what's nice about their brochure is they list trees, shrubs, large, medium, or small size, ground covers, and even accent plants for different environments. For example, Southern California coastal, Southern California inland, Southern California desert, and Southern California coastal color for small to medium home gardens. I love this brochure. I love being able to walk through a demonstration garden to envision how these plants would look in my own garden. So I highly recommend Rialta Park and Event Center as a demonstration garden for native plants. And you can also go on Goin Native, G-O-I-N, Native, therapeutic gardens, because what Mike is talking about is the therapeutic value of having a garden close at hand. Imagine coming home from work and being able to step outside into your garden and having some time just to enjoy the present without the stress of your daily schedule. Mike, I would like you to tell in detail how to plant a native plant.
Okay, well, you mean to actually put it in the ground, to install a native plant in the ground, to plant a plant?
Yes, because like you said, so many of us live on land that has been developed, and so it's not natural soil. It's very clay. Picture a developed land.
Okay, well, this again is on our website on the video called Plant It Right, but basically we recommend that you dig a planting hole that's larger than the container that your plant came in, wider, twice as wide, half again as deep, as an old adage that works, and then have the hose handy right there so that you fill the hole with water and let it drain out. That might take many hours or a whole day, but you'll get the water down deep, down into the soil beneath the hole if you do that. Now you have a hole that has moisture below it. Score the edges of the hole with your shovel so that there are no slick surfaces, not like a bathtub, but all rough and uneven. Compact the bottom part of the backfill. The backfill is the term for the soil that you're returning into the hole as you plant. So you put some of that in the bottom because the hole is slightly deeper than the planting container, and you compact that very well so that your new plant won't settle, won't sink into the hole over time. Moisten that backfill material. Set the plant atop the backfill with the crown, the spot where the stem comes out of the soil, slightly higher than the surrounding grade. Now you've got the plant sitting in the hole, and it's slightly high. You've got airspace around all sides of the plant because the hole is slightly wider than the planting container, remember? Okay, now what you have, by the way, when you pull that plant out of the pot, you don't yank on its stem, you turn it upside down and you knock it out and cradle the root ball in your arms, setting it into the hole. Now, as you're returning the backfill into the space around the root ball, you have the hose running and you're moistening that material quite thoroughly. You're not working in a muddy mess, but you're wetting all the material that goes in so that it's saturated. Get partway up, with your backfill, put water in it. More, 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 all the way to the top. Then water again. Now you're absolutely sure that there is water all around the root ball, in the root ball, below the root ball, and in the soil below and around the hole. There's no doubt that every bit of soil around and in the hole is very, very wet, saturated. Now you build a basin with the remaining backfill around the perimeter of what was the planting hole, well outside the planting hole. And then we like to see a secondary basin or a ring around the basin with another mound, a little berm around it, so that you have two basins, as it were, to catch rainwater and sprinkler irrigation so that it will soak in. Water the plant again, and you've got a thoroughly watered, newly installed native plant, which will probably not need another irrigation for 3 to 4 weeks, depending on soil conditions and the time of year. But the point is, you've just set up a great plant, a great planting for deep, infrequent waterings and not continual, frequent, shallow waterings.
As a young plant, for the roots to work itself in, do I need to water it a little bit more in that first year?
You might have to water it a little bit more frequently, but again, about every 2 or 3 weeks is what we're talking about here, because you're watering deep and the moisture stays down that low, that deep. So the point is, the worst thing you could do is think that by watering more, you water every other day for 5 minutes. That's only promotes shallow roots, which are not healthy. But if you water once every 10 days, once every 2 weeks, and well outside the planting hole, you're watering out where the berms are because you're trying to get the roots to extend out far away from the stem and the plant become naturalized. So the key is deep irrigations infrequently.
That was very, very helpful. We have a little bit of time left for you to tell us about the classes and workshops you have at Tree of Life. You have an expert workshop series going on?
There are always many, many workshops going on, and at Tree of Life Nursery, we have an outdoor classroom, which we call Indian Camp, and it's in the shade of a sycamore with a big oak nearby. We set up chairs, and the instructor stands or sits in the front, and they're free of charge. They're 9:30 a.m. every Saturday morning, and the topics vary from garden topics. Sometimes we get authors who sign books. We talk about native foods, native cultures. We have crafts and art, pollinators and birds, design, of course, and with obvious emphasis on native plant horticulture, but many, many other topics which are of general interest for people using native plants in the garden.
I went online recently to see that you had two speakers that really interested me. Last Saturday, November 14, you had Dr. Leon Bajinski, who shared his joy of habitat gardening to grow a garden that is beautiful and welcoming for native butterflies and moths, since they are facing dwindling numbers. And so that was a really neat workshop. You also had Sama Wera, who wrote the book How to Draw 60 Native California Plants and Animals, a Field Guide. And she taught a two-hour drawing class. That sounded like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a really good Saturday. Leon is an MD, and he's an incredibly busy person, obviously, a surgeon. And he takes time to give his share his expertise at Tree of Life, and his passion is native plant gardening and habitat style landscape gardening, and he is an expert on butterflies and moths and pollinating insects. And so he had a really good class, well attended, with PowerPoint presentation and lots of examples, live insects, praying mantis in a jar, a lot of pupa and chrysalis and cocoons for people to handle, as well as a few adult butterflies mounted and pinned so that they could be identified. It was a great class. And then just after lunch, Sama taught a drawing class in a very peaceful location on the nursery grounds and gave people the confidence to forge ahead with their sketchbooks But more than anything, she teaches how to observe nature, and that is the key to representing it or to depicting it in art, would be first to have good observation skills. So her class was excellent as well. It was a really good Saturday.
Will you have them back again?
Oh, yeah. They both are regulars.
Oh, they're regulars?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is good, because mm-hmm. I couldn't attend last Saturday.
Yeah.
But I really would like to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
We have reached the end of our show, but I want to give you one last chance to add anything you want to say about California native plants.
Well, just to say that it's, you know, again, one of the most diverse and amazing plant communities in the world. It's been recognized as that from a natural point of view for many, many years. And gardeners all over the world love our California native plants. You'll see Matilaha poppy, Fremontia, Ceanothus, Manzanita, Carpenteria, many of our trees, many of our flowering shrubs, salvias and whatnot, in some of the finest gardens all over the world. And so if they like them overseas, we can certainly love them where we are, because they happen to be native right here. So quite often, because they're native, because they seem so close at hand, they're not as sort of regularly celebrated, because they're not exotic. You know, they're by definition, they're native. But that doesn't make them any less special. In fact, it makes them more special in today's world, because by putting them close to us in our gardens, we get the opportunity to have nature right where we live.
And Mike's Tree of Life is the largest supplier of California native plants in the state. And you can find some of these native plants in retail nurseries near your home today.
That's right. You can, but come on over and see us. And like Anne said earlier, I would recommend that the listeners all take advantage of the California Native Plant Society, which is celebrating 50 years of existence and has a very, very good chapter here, right here in Orange County.
So go online to check their website as well, and you will see that they have monthly meetings here at the Duck Club, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Duck Club here in Irvine. Mike has shared his extensive expertise and time with us, and I really do appreciate it, because he's a very busy, busy man. Thank you, Mike. I've really enjoyed having you on my show. You've given us important reasons for considering native plants in our garden. They can help make a beautiful garden authentic. They can invite beneficials into our garden and help to manage pests. They save water. Most importantly, native plants in the garden will help bring nature in miniature into our own home. Thank you so much, Mike.
You're welcome, Anne, and thank you very much for having me.
I'd like to end my show with this reminder: gardeners live longer, healthier, and happier lives. Thank you for listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in the Garden Show, or online at kuci.org. Tune in every week on Thursday, 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. for another green topic. Following this show is Home Plate, so stay tuned to listen to our very own Galley Girl. Have a great week.